Oh my God. Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome to Something About, a podcast where I am currently covering the new season of Only Murders in the Building. Seasons 1, 2 are available on Hulu, hashtag not sponsored. And episodes 1 through 7 of the current season 3, are also available on Hulu. Again, hashtag not sponsored. And we are now all caught up. I am so excited. I literally just finished taking the notes, so I thought I'm gonna record the podcast now. Otherwise, we won't, well, we'll be caught up, but we won't be. So now we are. And I haven't said it in a hot minute. But spoiler alerts ahead. Unless you really don't care, then like, welcome, we love that. But spoiler alerts, if you're not all caught up or you're just listening for shits and gigs, love that too. You won't fully know what's happening, but that's okay. I say let's dive right in. And I do want to say I'm really glad I bought another notebook because I literally filled up to the last point of my first notebook. So I'm really glad I got another one. So episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10 will all be able to fit. And I ordered it early, so I didn't have to wait last minute. Your girl was a little bit prepared. She likes to procrastinate, but this time I was prepared. And we are all caught up. So procrastination, I kicked your butt-ish. There's always episode 8 that could throw me for a loop, as in I record it late. But good vibes. We're gonna get going. We are on episode 7, titled Cobro. Again, spoiler alerts. It starts and we see Uma and Bunny. I missed Bunny. Walking down the street to the pickle diner. And we hear Uma say, "Believe it or not, I love people. Some people." Bunny has one of those fidget spinners and she's going to show it to Uma. She rolls her eyes and she tells Bunny every schmuck is getting one. And she continues, "I just don't always trust them." They're sitting in their probably regular booth and they're splitting a sandwich. And then as the waiter walks by, she's sitting in her regular booth. The sandwich is split. But Bunny is no longer sitting across from her, and it was like sad. Uma continues, "They have a bad habit of leaving." She gets in the elevator, and Lester comments on her hair, like, "Did you get a haircut? It looks great." And she tells him to keep it in his pants, and as he's walking onto the elevator and she's leaving, she takes something from his pocket. It looks like a pen or a pencil with like a fun little eraser. "Things I trust." She picks up a cat toy. It's probably one of those catnip ones outside of Howard's apartment. "Things are made to last from place to place, from generation to generation. It's why I take stuff and keep it so the people can stay with me." I love Uma. That's so sad. And she's filing away all her trinkets in her little closet. "If that makes me a klepto, so be it. Because when the people we love are gone and memories fade, what else? What the hell else keeps them alive?" And she's outside the elevator and she's using Bunny's fidget spinner. It's the night of Ben's death. The trio is rushing out of the elevator as Ben's body is like falling through the ceiling, and we hear her say her like my favorite line of the whole season, "You gotta be fucking kidding me." And she's like looking through them at Ben's body, and she's eyeing the handkerchief. We now see present day. Charles enter the pickle diner. Uma is there in her regular booth. And he goes to sit down and he's sitting by himself. She tells him to sit by the aisle. It makes the table feel smaller. They're sitting like across from each other with the two tables between them. She tells him also not to think about it, as in joining her. And he pulls out a book. He's like, I brought a book. I'm going to catch up on my reading. She takes half of the sandwich off the plate, puts it on a smaller one, moves it to the side, and she mentions she and Bunny would always split it. And they came every week, you know, till they killed her. And Charles is like, we didn't kill her. She asked him where his friends were and if he also murdered them. He kind of like gives her a look like, are you kidding me? She offers him the other half of her sandwich. He goes on to tell her that he quit the musical, and she goes, oh, you were shit canned. And he goes on to explain to her it was ruining his life, his sanity, his engagement, his relationship with President McKinley. She's a little shocked by that last bit. Oliver has only cared about the show. And Uma says it's hard to lose friendships at their age. And he implies that his age and her age are different. But they'll be back. And he has plenty of time to wait. And she's like, are you sure you have plenty of time to wait? And this is probably my favorite part of the episode, is what Uma says. And I feel like these aren't necessarily words to live by, but we understand what she's saying. She tells Charles, there are three types of people, alive, dead, and dead to me. She goes on to say Bunny was dead to her a lot. Never apologized for when they did get into a fight. Uma also never apologized either. But she was like, what did I do? So Uma assumed it was never her fault. What a queen. But they would move on because they forget what they were fighting about over time. But luckily, Bunny was not dead to her when she actually died. And then we move... They move on, and Oliver and Mabel aren't going to die. That's what Charles says to her. And they're going to reach out to him at some point and apologize. His cell phone goes off, and, you know, he kind of looks like, oh, see, it's them. It's not. It's someone else talking about the Philharmonics. And he's like, I'm not a friend of the Philharmonics. I thought I was. And Uma gets up and leaves as the bill gets put down, and she thanks Charles for paying. And when she goes to get up, he notices the items in Uma's bag, specifically a handkerchief with baby rattles on it. It's Ben's handkerchief. She's getting up, she's leaving. He looks at the check, and he's like, say what? And she's like, I ordered lunch and dinner too, bye. She's gone. He's paying. Mabel is with moving boxes. Theo is there helping her pack up her place. And he tells her he's going to miss it. And also that she waited too long to pack. But she tells him, in my defense, you know, I'm obsessed with murder. And she asks Theo, how do you sign murder? And he shows her. And Theo asks about Charles and Oliver, and she tells him, you know, there's still no word for them since the fight. And she doesn't need them because she is the only one that cares about Ben in this case. Theo suggests that Mabel talk to his brother because there's no one closer to him than his brother. And he goes on to tell her that Dickie is having like a silent auction in the penthouse of Ben's movie props and memorabilia today. He also mentions how he really liked Cobra, and Mabel's a little shocked and they giggle. Oliver is in his apartment and he's auditioning new actors for Charles's part. And it's not going well. Cliff and Donna are there, and the actor leaves, and Oliver asks where all the good actors are. They're being kept from him. And he asks Cliff, you know, and where the old crusty lists are. And Cliff starts stress dancing. And as he's dancing, he stops and he realizes he has an idea. He's going to go make a phone call. Donna mentions they have decent actors for the constable. You know, they had a decent actor for the constable. Oliver's like, I'm not going to apologize to Charles. You know, he also quit. And I also have too much integrity to beg him to come back. And Donna's like, you have no integrity. And Oliver, the look on his face is like, you're also not wrong. She and Cliff are trying to rev people up about, you know, his genius mad redo musical of Death Rattle. And it's hard. They compare Charles was the only kind of big name that they had. And Oliver compares him to a young Ebenezer's brother vibe. And he could do the old-timey, whiny lingo. And, like, he was kind of fun. But it's not about fun. They need a commitment to the show. And Charles, you know, wasn't committed to it. They wanted passion over talent. Oliver's laying on the floor during the next audition. And Donna tells the actor, that just means he loves it. No. Cliff walks back in the room. His guy is coming through. And Oliver sees the text and he is just at a loss of words. Charles sees these men entering the elevator and he's looking around and he realizes that they're dressed very much like him. And one guy wishes him luck as Charles is stepping off the elevator. And he says, the Putnam guy is a monster. And as Charles is going to say, like, Oliver isn't a... He realizes Oliver is recasting his part. And he looks over to Oliver's door. Because you assume in that moment he was probably going to go and apologize. He was going to suck up his pride and go apologize to Oliver. He walks over to the door. It's slightly ajar and he hears the piano playing and the pitter patter song being sung, and the man singing it is none other than Matthew Broderick. So we now know the Matthew Broderick part from the commercials. I thought he was going to be the person living in the penthouse. I was wrong. He is playing a dramatized version of himself. Matthew Broderick is finishing up the song, and it's great. Oliver is beaming. He's glowing. He looks at Matthew, and he tells him he's had sex dreams about this moment. That's all we need. He's already nailed the song. He's a vessel. He's ready for this part. Oliver wants him to sing more, and... You know, he just keeps standing there and Oliver is just, he's just soaking it in. You know, he now has a Broadway legend in his show. Cliff and Matthew Broderick are friends and Oliver asks him, how did you two meet? And they met while sheltering during Hurricane Sandy. I don't know if you remember Hurricane Sandy. It fucked New York City up. Not so much Massachusetts, but I'm like right in the center of Massachusetts. So we got some rain and wind, but we did not get fucked like New York City did. So they met while sheltering at the Ritz-Carlton for 2 weeks. They almost ran out of room service. And Oliver gives them a look like, oh my God, that is hard. Charles has kind of snuck in to see what's happening. And Matthew goes on to tell them, when Cliff called, I dropped everything. And Donna goes on to say, no more with fussy TV franchise phony balonies. And as Donna finishes that, Matthew says, Charles Hayden Savage? And Donna's like, yeah, exactly. And Matthew's like, no, Charles Hayden Savage, because he sees him in Oliver's apartment. And Charles runs out and he goes to like ring Oliver's doorbell. I wasn't sure if they had doorbells there, but we now know. He goes to like ring the doorbell. He lies and tells him like, oh, Lester told me to like test out everyone's doorbell. And I'm going to go tell him that like yours is working perfectly fine. And Oliver introduces Matthew Broderick to Charles as, this is your replacement. And they know each other. This is not the first time Matthew has stolen a role from Charles. And Matthew tells Charles, you wouldn't have been a very good Ferris Bueller. You were 41. I've seen the movie Ferris Bueller a couple times. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite Matthew Broderick movie. I really like Inspector Gadget or 1999. It's either 1999 or 2000's Godzilla movie. I really like those two films. He wants to get back to work. You know, he's got a song to sing. And, you know, Matthew sings it and he's got it. He's got it. Charles leaves. Matthew asks Oliver, I noticed that you had a blue raspberry gut milk and would you care to share one? So Oliver is still subscribed to Gut Milk and they have since expanded their flavors. Mabel and Theo are, you know, headed up into the penthouse. They enter it. You see the big gold cobra snake right there in like the Forge part. And Theo does the sign language for your history. And Mabel is very confused. And he goes on to explain it's the Cobra catchphrase. And Mabel says, and I am part of it, that people loved dumb superhero movies. I love the Marvel movies. I have cats named after the Marvel superheroes. So like, yeah, I'm one of those dumb people. And she goes on to say it's a snake that like fights crime. She doesn't get it. And Theo explains to her it's about shedding labels that society puts on us. And Mabel gives him a look like, really? He then goes, yeah, it's also about a snake that like fights crime. Like, you're not wrong, but there is a deeper message. Mabel picks up a drawing and it's from Ben's childhood. And it's the idea from when Ben was a kid that he came up with for Cobra. And when he got famous, he turned it into a movie. Mabel got half of what Theo said. And she responded to him by calling him a giant nerd. And Theo looks at her and tells her, I'm a Cobra, ain't no shame. And the relationship's really cute since season one. Like, it seems she has forgiven him for killing her best friend. And, you know, they got closer during season two when they went to go figure out who Glitter Guy was. And I think in that moment, she understood that he was very much under his father's influence. And he is repenting for what he did. And he, like, is genuinely sorry. Dickie sees Mabel. He recognizes her. And he didn't peg her as a Cobra fan. She's a bit nervous. And Theo's kind of, like, behind them. And she tells him, like, yeah, I'm a huge fan. I love how the films and like the idea about like shedding labels And Dickie responds like, wow, that's really insightful. But also asks her what her, you know, favorite film was. And she says it's the second one because Theo, you know, puts up two fingers. Return of the Whip Lord, as Theo is trying to, like, he's not signing it. He's, like, miming it out so she'll get it. And Ben's like, hasn't aged well. And she's like, yeah, the Jamaican accents. And he's like, also, like, the special effects. I'm wondering if it's very similar to when Robert Downey Jr. was in Tropic Thunder. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. And you will understand that reference. I'm not going to explain it. Mabel was there and she just wanted to ask Dickie before Ben had died. He had, you know, received a phone call and she was curious if it was from the police or the doctors. Dickie stops her and tells her, like, if you're looking for a juicy nugget for your podcast or for the Daily Mail, you gotta go somewhere else. And she goes on to explain that Greg is not the guy. And Dickie tells her everyone is trying to make a buck off of Ben's death. And it's just really fucking gross. And he sees an article and he tells whomever it was, like, there's a minimum 5K bid on his artwork. And Mabel feels a little bit bad about, you know, what she just did and asked for. Keep that in mind. Oliver and Matt are chatting, and Matt's going on about Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise and how he has a beautiful voice. He's talking about Mel Brooks and, you know, what if it was a musical? I believe he's hinting at the producers. Oliver enjoyed the name drops and that it was delightful because we know Oliver loves a name drop. His aren't always as delightful. Matthew warns him when he commits to a role, he really commits. Oliver loves it. And he goes on to tell him, most people are half in, half out. You know, I have kids. I have a fiance. I have a fish. He's pretty much mocking Charles about why Charles could not give it his all. And, you know, like, it's theater. You know, what else is there than the theater? And Matthew wholeheartedly agrees. Though Matthew has three children, that's why I'm thinking it is a dramatized version of him, because I'm pretty sure Matthew would put his children before his work. And Matthew looks to Oliver and tells him he needs help to understand the constable. And he goes on to explain during War Games, he taught himself to write code. And for his role in Election, he started teaching high school, and he even started dating some of the students. And as he's telling Oliver this, Oliver's face is excited. And then with the last bit, he's a bit thrown off. Like, excuse me? Matthew goes on to say if, you know, the constable has a lisp, he has one. If he has a gun, he has a gun. He asks Oliver, can you get me a gun? And, you know, Oliver mentions anything. I'll get you anything. And when you come back tomorrow, we'll. And Matthew says, like, no, we have to start rehearsing, like, right now. Opening night is in 2 weeks. Oliver is a bit shocked by Matthew's statement, but, like, okay. And Matthew goes on to say, Ferris Bueller may have taken a day off, but Matthew Broderick does not. And Oliver's like, that's music to my ears, Matthew Broderick. And they get to rehearsing. Charles is sitting on his couch in his living room. The windows are open and he can hear loud music playing. We assume it's Matthew Broderick rehearsing. He shuts his window and he walks over to his desk and he opens a drawer and he pulls out a bag. It's the collection of handkerchiefs he asked from everybody. And he picks one up and he's looking at it. Matthew was singing for the 38th time, "It's Purpose. It's Perfect." And he asks Oliver, "Where's the constable from?" And Oliver looks at him and says, "Wherever you're from." Matthew Broderick goes, "Well, if he's from Manhattan, that changes his entire relationship to the constable, to his profession, you know? If he was a kid in the 1890s, you know, the city was, you know, at Royals with ethnic tension. Irishmen, Prussians. If you don't know where Prussia is, it is modern-day Germany and some slightly surrounding areas. The, you know, era of the bicycle craze, horse-drawn trolley. He needs to rethink the singing with a different tone. And, you know, he tells the piano man to start playing, and he starts singing with, like, a Manhattan accent. I don't know, but you can tell he's singing it differently. Mabel is talking to Dickie. She apologizes to him, and she tells him, you know, I've lost people too, so I understand. And Dickie apologizes to her that he shouldn't have taken his frustrations out on her. And it's hard for him. His brother has always been his business. And he goes on to tell her, you know, he was adopted when his parents didn't think they could have children. And then when they had Ben, he was the miracle baby, child star Ben. And ever since then, he felt like he had to protect him. And he spent his whole life doing it. So he probably feels guilty that Ben, you know, was murdered. And he had to cover up for Ben because he was always fucking up. He made insensitive jokes, DUIs, the dick pics, thousands of dick pics. Mabel tells him, "I never read or saw any of that." And Dickie's like, "Exactly. I was the one cleaning it up, making Ben look good." And Ben's, you know, still got all the credit, the story of their lives. You know, he got the fame, he got the Cobra franchise, and, you know, he was just difficult. And, you know, he breaks it down that a person is a collection of a thousand little details, and when they're gone, those are the things that you miss the most. So for as much as he was frustrated and angry and mad at Ben, he misses him. Like, that's my brother. You know, he goes on to say Ben loved, you know, boba, the gross, disgusting green tea flavor. He really liked funny dog videos on Instagram. Same. Fun fact, he set all his clocks 20 minutes back. So when he would arrive fashionably late. Mabel apologizes to Dickie that Ben is gone and that he owes it to him to find the real killer. And Ben's like, "We did. The stalker. You know, like, he chained you and Charles up. What do you mean?" And Mabel mentions the hanky and that Greg loved Ben. And he goes on, no. "I took my eye off him for 1 second and Greg killed my brother. And he now has to live with that for the rest of his life." He goes on to say Ben was killed at 12:06 at night and Greg was seen leaving the building right after that. There's no story. Like, that's it. There it is. We now see Charles about to knock on Uma's door. And she's behind him. She knows why he's there. He tells her the hanky is a clue and he'd really like it. He can't have it. He goes on to tell her it'd be the perfect peace offering for Oliver and Mabel. He can't afford to wait to apologize to them. What if he hears no more millennial references he doesn't get? Or another story of dark nights at Plato's retreat with Buck Henry. Uma says that doesn't sound that bad. And Charles used to think that too, but he needs to make up with them. She tells him, you know, to use his fucking words instead of a hanky to solve his problems. Oh, and she also doesn't have the hanky anymore. She got some moron to pay $7,000 for it. Snooze, you lose. And, you know, he needed it to give to Mabel, but she sold it to a snake dork upstairs. And she's like, whatever happened to real men? Referring to the guy that bought it. He goes to follow her into her apartment, and she just kind of closes the door behind her, yet in his face at the same time. Matthew is continuing to practice his song. And again, it sounds like he has his 1890s Manhattan accent going on, probably. I don't know. Oliver is calling Mel Brooks, and Mel answers the phone. They're FaceTiming, so we see Mel Brooks, and he's just so cute. I love Mel Brooks's films. That's another podcast. He apologizes to Mel for never getting a chance to see the producers. He was busy at the time, and Mel is like, what? You didn't get a chance to see the producer? It was on for 6 years. It played over 2,500 performances. And Oliver is sent his ways and said the times just never worked out for him. He goes on to ask Mel if he had any problems, you know, he may have had with working with Broderick. And Mel goes on to tell him, you know, if you're working with him, do not tell him you're open to any of his ideas. And the look on Oliver's face is like, I might have fucked up. And he hangs up on Mel. We now see Mabel and Theo, and they're continuing to pack up the apartment. And she's kind of taking down her little bulletin board a bit, but also just looking at the items on it. And she's looking at a photo, and it's from the night Ben had died in the elevator. And she's taking a closer look at his watch. And she comes to the conclusion, Greg wasn't in the building when Ben was murdered. His watch reads 12:06. But if you remember, Dickie said he set his watch back 20 minutes early. So really, Ben died at 12:26. Greg was already long out of the building, so someone else had to have pushed Ben. And Theo looks at Mabel and now calls her the giant nerd. Tobert is also there, and he kind of just walks in and he's like, I didn't know about Ben's little watch trick. I just always thought he was late. And he is setting up recording equipment, and he mentions that Cinda's not the only one with a setup. Mabel is practicing what she's going to say for her first, I believe this is her first recording for the podcast. She goes on to say only murder, but then she realizes that they'll have to change the name. Torbert's already ahead of that with an idea, and he's got a cover photo for it too, the Bloody Mabel podcast. And the cover is a picture of Mabel, and it's very similar to her mugshot photo. Her hair is slicked back. She's wearing a white turtleneck, but she doesn't look as upset, and she's like biting into a bloody knife. It's kind of a good cover photo. And he's really excited about it, but she goes, no. And he goes, yeah, you're right. It's not that good. He changes his mind very quick. And then she realizes that she never introduced Theo and Tobert. So she introduces Theo to Tobert. And Tobert realizes, oh, he's the Theo, the one from the podcast. He's been listening. And Theo looks at Mabel and signs like, whoa, you never told me about his eyes. And Tobert's like, what's he saying? And Mabel is like, he really likes the poster. You captured my eyes really well. And Theo's looking at her like, yeah, that's exactly what I said. She asks him about the flyer that Theo is holding. It's not a flyer. It's the first comic of the Cobro series that, you know, B. Glenn Roy came up with. But Theo points to the B. And Tobert's like, yeah, B for Ben. Duh. And he points to it again. And the B actually look like it's an R with the bottom connecting to make it look like a B. And they're like, whose name starts with an R? And Mabel's like, names start with R. Like, duh. Richard. Dickie. Dickie is short for Richard. Mabel goes on to say, because it's all clicking now, Ben always got credit. Dickie created it and Ben stole it and took all the fame. You know, this is motive. And Tobert's like, what? A B being an R? And Mabel's like, listen, we thought Sting was a murderer because he didn't like dogs. This is actually solid evidence. We need to record an episode and then we need to dig deeper. Matthew is still rehearsing on how the constable should hold a gun. And he goes on to explain, you know, he wouldn't hold a gun with his arm up. In Nova Scotia, they'd have their arm more towards the side with their hand pointed up with the gun. And Oliver just tells him to go home. He's had enough of, you know, Broderick's insane questions. He tells him, no one cares about any of it. The constable is a constable. He's 6 grams of ink on paper. He's a few electrons on his hard drive. He could delete him and he'd be eradicated from his musical. And as he's saying this, he's kind of leading Matthew out of his apartment. Matthew Broderick said, okay, see you at 6 a.m. Nova Scotia time. Oliver is clearly annoyed, and like rightfully so, because 6 a.m. Nova Scotia time, it's pretty much 6 a.m. Manhattan time, because Nova Scotia, I believe, is in the same like time zone as Manhattan, because it's really not that, it's like 5 hours away, I think. It's like 5 hours away from Massachusetts, so it's probably 6 hours away from New York. So it's just 6 a.m. He goes to open the door to let him out. Charles is outside his door. They're also both in their pajamas. Charles says he was checking the peepholes, making sure, you know, none of them are wrong, and that, like, maybe I was here to apologize. And Oliver accepts it. He also says, you can have your part back. Charles is like, no, I don't want the part back. I just would like to hang out, please. And Oliver fires Matthew Broderick and, you know, tells Charles to, you know, just, we're going to hang out, but like 8 days a week, or not 8 days a week, 8 shows a week. And Matthew tells him, I've seen Charles be out acted by a horse. Oliver doesn't care. He tells him, you know, he probably enjoyed himself because he got to spend a day with Charles Haden Savage, who was kind to him, who fed him oats out of the palm of his hand. And, you know, he can't take it anymore. He can't take Matthew anymore because that horse probably worked with Matthew, and Matthew rode him and rode him and rode him. And as he's going on about the horse, Oliver is pretty much comparing himself to the horse. He apologizes. And, you know, he said, you know, if the horse could apologize, you know, he would say he's sorry, but, you know, he's a little messed up emotionally, and he hates himself, and he wished he was dead, you know, for hurting his best friend's feelings, and that someone would just turn him into glue. Charles accepts Oliver's very roundabout way of apologizing, and they hung it out, and he's like, I guess I'll do the play. And he looks at Matthew Broderick and tells him that horse won a patsy. And Matthew goes, what's a patsy? And he goes, it's an Emmy for horses. And he tells Matthew bye-bye and to go home. And as he's outside the door, he looks at Oliver and tells him if he has any adjustments, you know, he's very flexible. And that it's best to be honest. And Oliver shuts the door on him. And he looks at Charles and tells him, you'd be the better Ferris. And Charles is like, do you mean that? And Oliver's like, I want to. But Matthew Broderick is perfect. And he was perfect for that role. So, like, sorry. Talbert has this wild, like, podcasting set up, and he asks Mabel what software Oliver was using. And I, like, totally related to this because I just use a microphone and just some software I heard about on a podcast, and that's what I use. I use Anchor by Spotify or whatever Spotify's calling it now, but it's owned and run by Spotify, so, like, that's what I use. But he's got this insane setup. And he asks her about the new name. And she's looking very overwhelmed. And she just gets it from the table. And she just decides to record it on her own, on her phone. And he goes on to say, yeah, you solved 3 murders that way. And you were very fond of telling me that. And Theo picks up a pad of paper and writes a little note to show to Talbert since he doesn't do sign language. And he writes out that he couldn't figure her out either. And as she's holding her notepads of notes, probably her script of what she's going to say, she looks at her phone, and the cover of her phone is the 3 of them smiling. Like, it's really cute. Charles is catching Uma up on, like, what happened with Uma. And he calls her a sneakish devil nymph. And, you know, she literally took the hanky out of Ben's hands. And Charles is like, I don't know how that could have happened. We were right there. And Charles tells him, you and Mabel were just distraught and not paying attention. I don't know how I let it, you know, just out of my eyesight when Oliver obviously was the one distraught. And Mabel and Charles probably had to talk Oliver off a ledge. Charles asks if Oliver has talked to Mabel at all. And he mentions he tried to call her and he was like, what? And Oliver was like, yeah, but, you know, she'd hate that. Oliver also tried drafting a text message, but he deleted it, but accidentally sent her a comma. And, you know, that they really messed up with her, as she would call it an epic fail. Or not she, kids nowadays would call it an epic fail. Charles asked why he did erase the note on the mirror. And Oliver gets up and he shows Charles's Loretta's little, like, scrapbook stalker album of Ben. Charles doesn't think it's that bad that she did it. And Oliver's like, damn it, she's a killer. And Charles is like, why do you say that? And Oliver tells Charles, like, your instincts are terrible. And, you know, because of Jan. And he just tells Oliver, why don't you talk to Loretta? I wish I had talked to Joy. And, you know, maybe if we bring this to Mabel, we can offer it as a peace offering to her. And then if that doesn't work to win her back with a clue, we will apologize. We'll grovel. You know, the next day happens because they're kind of sipping on a little gut milk in his apartment. So they're probably a little drunk, if you remember. Gut milk kind of fucked him up. And so they're going up to her apartment and they're going to practice what they're going to say to her. And they go to knock and it's not Mabel that answers the door. It's a woman with a baby. And she asks them, are you the movers? And they're like, movers? And she goes, I'm not paying for your fucking hernias when they happen. And she closes the door. The phone dings. A new episode has dropped. It's Mabel's episode. And everyone is listening. Uma is listening. Lester is listening. The new detective is listening. Dickie is holding Ben's hanky covered in blood. So Dickie is the one that bought the handkerchief from Uma. And Mabel is saying that she is flying solo for the new season of Only Murders in the Building. And Charles and Oliver are shocked. And she also mentions the hashtag Bloody Mabel. And as she's going over the notes and about Ben's murder, we see Detective Biswas picks up the phone. It's ringing. And he goes, you're right. They are a major pain in the ass. We need to reopen the Ben Glenroy case. And I'm assuming that's Detective Williams on the other end of the phone because she's the only one that would call him a pain in the ass. So I'm really hoping for episode 8 that she comes back. And I did on Instagram, which if you'd like to follow the show on Instagram, it is something.about.podcast. I post there as often as I can. And I posted about the descriptions for the next episode, episode 8. And I tagged her saying like, oh my God, does this mean she's back? Because it says an official makes a return and she'd be the official police officer. And she responded back with like the smiley face with like his hand on his chin, like, And I was like, oh, so she saw it. And I have a feeling that that means she's returning. So that's awesome. Missed her. I'd love to roll. I would love to see little baby Keith as well. So grown up. But we now know Ben is adopted. Not Ben. Ben's brother, Dickie, is adopted. I have a stronger feeling now that Loretta is Dickie's mother. And either he knows about it or he doesn't. And she is using the play to get to him because she knows he was Ben's manager. So I have a feeling maybe Dickie or Loretta possibly killed Ben. Loretta, because Ben treated Dickie like such an asshole and took credit for everything. Or Dickie killed Ben because he took credit for everything when he should be the star. But thank you for listening. If you could rate, like, and review wherever it is you listen to podcasts and stream them, that would be amazing. Share it. Again, give us a follow on Instagram. I would say 5 stars only, but like any stars would be really great. And that's all. We are officially caught up. I'm so excited. I can't wait for the next episode. Talk to you later. Bye.